If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball. It's our regular recurring episode with sports columnist Jeff Gordon of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and we're going to talk about just the grind of June. Yeah, sure, they say the dog days is there in August, but really, these are some dogged days for the Cardinals as they go through a stretch of 27 days with one off day. And they have to find their way through it when they're maybe not playing their best baseball. They're pretty ragged. So how much does that have to do with? And what kind of fatigue-related issues are they really dealing with, Gordo? Plus, we'll talk about in this stretch where they face the Royals, the Dodgers, and then off to Milwaukee face the Brewers. Where's the Cardinals' sweet spot for where they are with market size and how they contend? All of that and more in a brand new episode of the Best Podcast in Baseball. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined, as I am frequently this week, by Jeff Gordon, instant offense, author of Tip Sheet, and sports columnist. What sports columnist galore? Is that a right phrase? What do we go with here, Gordon?
I'd say durable.
Durable. I like that a lot. Indefatigable. That's a title I've often liked.
We're gonna set records for games played, but nothing else.
Or as I was called at J school, prolific. There was no like value given or grade given on how good my prolificness was. I was just called prolific. That I think that's quite a damning statement to put like on the cover of a book, right? Like a book blurb where it just says prolific.
Yeah, I'm thinking of hockey. Our old friend Stan Fischler, prolific. He has like 750 books.
Yes.
He's been writing for like 600 years. I think he's still alive. Had his wife involved. That was prolific.
You know Jeff Gordon from the pages of the Post-Dispatch and, of course, STLtoday.com, where he writes columns. Gordo, one of your recent columns talked about how the Royals have become a factor in the American League Central and what the Cardinals could learn from that, or what the Cardinals could borrow from that, or even mimic in regards to that. What captured you about the Royals and what they've done and how they've emerged again 10, 12 years after their more recent foray into a World Series contender and World Series champion?
Well, the hard part is getting enough pitching through all means necessary, right? And they had a long, unfortunate stretch where they drafted guys and guys couldn't stay healthy. Guys they were counting on to be the future. You know, certainly Mike Matheny felt the pain of just having a lot of younger guys and not really getting over the hump with them. They've sort of shown some of the craftiness of the Milwaukee Brewers and going out and finding value guys in addition to developing guys, in addition to sticking with guys who have gone through difficult times and end up with a pitching staff that's really effective, and so much so that they're kind of wondering how are they going to fit all these guys in their rotation now that they're getting healthier. So that part, you know, you definitely want to be on the side of how do you get enough pitching through all means necessary, you know, the draft, every way possible, international signings. We saw a guy they've had, how long has, you know, Zerpa been with them? Forever.
Yeah, forever.
They signed him, and now he's very helpful, a very helpful player. So, yeah, they've got a lot going on.
He was filthy. He was really good.
He was for real. And the other thing is when you get a chance to draft high and get a Bobby Witt Jr., you get a Bobby Witt Jr. And the Cardinals are in a position where they felt, you know, where they feel pretty good about Weatherholt. They're going to have another high pick. And so they've got to find those players too.
They can't miss, right? They're in a spot where, like, if teams miss on their high picks, some teams go, well, we'll be back there soon. The lottery has changed that, right? Like, you know, the White Sox are going through this really terrible stretch. And, oh, by the way, they can't, you know, and oh, I'm sorry, it's the Rockies, right? The Rockies, that's the team. They can't pick higher than, you know, than where they have been because of the new draft lottery. So they're going to have this like catastrophically bad season and not get the benefit or even access to a top pick because, oh yeah, you were too catastrophically bad in the previous years too. You can't even time your tank right. So the equation is a little bit changed, but for the Cardinals, you know, they've gone so long between these high picks to having back-to-back years, the seventh pick and the fifth pick, then, and to get the fifth pick after having a season where they had a winning record is remarkable. It's, you're right. They can't miss, not if they become the team that they want to, where they're going to cycle out of the high picks in the near future.
Yeah. It'd be hard if they pick, if they're anywhere near the fifth overall pick again, going forward. I mean, the rules will prevent that, of course, to a degree, but you just don't want to be in that. You just want to be in that chase. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be worried. You don't want to worry about, well, we'd have a higher pick, but we're terrible again. No, you just want to be, you want to quit being terrible and you want to go back to picking, 18th, 20th, 25th, 28th, whatever, as you make your progress through the, which is really, you really want to be in the 20s. It's unfortunate you're not going to find a Bobby Witt Jr. in the 20s in all likelihood. But, you know, you found Mason Wynn. You found, Jordan Walker. You found some guys you can build around. A very good, very crafty pick in Alec Burleson. Mm-hmm. You've got guys, and you have to keep doing that. But, you know, in terms of what the Royals do too is, you know, they have a ballpark that's conducive to pitching like the Cardinals.
For now.
And they've got to play to that, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think we've seen the Cardinals this year lean into a style of play that works everywhere, and we've talked about it, that works at the ballpark, and it shows up. I do think that there's a difference between, like, okay, you got a Bobby Witt Jr., and you know there's Bobby Witt Jr., you got a Jack Caglino, you know who that is, the slugger who made his major league debut here this past year, less than 12 months after the draft. The first Royal to make his major league debut so soon after the draft since Bo Jackson in the mid-1980s, 86, for all you baseball card fans out there, of course. When you think about, like, all right, you got to hit on those, whereas the Cardinals are more like you just described, quantity of mid-range picks, right? The Wins, the Burlesons, because they're still waiting for their higher picks, the Jordan Walkers and the Nolan Gormans, to really connect. And it becomes a question, and it is like this developing theme of the season, is how many of these players do they need to establish themselves to either hasten or really more clearly assure that they're building towards contention. And they're not just like, oh, no, we got to cycle out and go through this whole thing again to find another young group who can connect.
Well, yeah. And, of course, baseball forces you to figure out what you have, because as guys start to get in the arbitration process, as guys get ever closer to the free agency, you've got to make decisions. We've seen Jack Flaherty and Tommy Edmond move to that stage and go out and get real coin out in the market to win a championship, have varying degrees of success and health since leaving. But ultimately, you would, at some point, the franchise, I think, would like to have guys that are, they'd actually keep and succeed with, find enough guys that you're admittedly going to have to pay a lot of money to, and get your payroll up that way versus having to go out and try to find expensive mid-level free agents or price. I wouldn't say expensive, overpriced mid-level guys to fill gaps, or older guys. And we've talked about that. You've got to get out of that game. You got to quit taking guys for their twilight years and what they were. So yeah, how do you get to that? And I'm guessing you've got a guy who's going to be your next baseball president of baseball ops that's not going to go in that world. Nolan Arenado might be the last old guy we see playing for the Cardinals for a while.
Well, that'd be interesting if they don't supplement. Well, Sonny Gray is around for a little bit. Would he qualify?
Oh yeah, but you know he would. But in his case, playing at a high level, the way that contract is structured, though, we'll see in See what the team is in a year.
right. If that option is picked up, he becomes the first $100 million free agent signing for the Cardinals, which says something both about him and where he'll be in his career at that point, but a whole lot about the Cardinals and how reluctant they've been, or how successful, to be more specific, they've been in locking down free agents at that nine-figure factor. One team that hasn't had any problem signing free agents like that, of course, is the Dodgers. They're in town for their visit to St. Louis. The Shohei Ohtani show is in town. They do have a lighter traveling group than expected, because they have 42 pitchers on the injured list, give or take 27. It's a fascinating reminder of just what a juggernaut, what a financial behemoth the Dodgers are, that they can have so many pitchers on the injured list and just then kind of refresh and backfill the roster by spending. You know, they have injuries on there, so they can go pick up a Ryan Lutis. And, you know, Ryan Lutis, who was with the Cardinals, plucked off of waivers because the Cardinals moved him off their roster. The Dodgers pick him up and, you know, they'll move on. You know, they can be callous in the way that they churn through players, but they can also cut a check for, you know, for the remainder of a guy's salary if another team doesn't pick him up. And that can be any dollar. And then they'll just say goodbye. And if another team picks them up, then it's a prorated minimum. But, you know, the Dodgers use their financial strength, their financial muscle, to create depth to get through a stretch like this. All of that is prelude, Jeff, to ask you, you know, the Dodgers have 38 wins. The Cardinals have 34 wins. Are the Cardinals as close to the Dodgers as they are in the standings, or is that gap bigger? Are the standings the misleading?
Yeah, they're obviously misleading because, you know that, like you say, they've got 900 injuries. They will at some point get healthier, or they will find guys who are healthy. Mm-hmm. There's no limit to what the Dodgers can do going during the course of the season to get where they have to get. So you judge the Cardinals on their developmental arc, mindful that even if they're buyers, they're going to be adding a guy here or a guy there that would be helpful without really damaging the overall plan. The Dodgers can just do whatever. Right. So that is part of it. You know, you do admire the Dodgers because it's a well-run organization. They do player development well. They've been pretty smart about using their resources well, their capital, the prospect capital. But it, you know, ultimately, especially going into these this deferred money route, that route, with they have so much, you know, private equity money in that franchise. The guys that the money behind the franchise is so massive that they're just operating in a whole different way. And it's scary when a team has that combination of franchise of resources, limitless, literally limitless, and really smart people, and a manager who understands how to cobble together on a given day, you know, in a given week, a team. Like Dave Roberts this week, I mean, look at some of the lineups he's had to roll out with. I mean, and he's still, you know, they're just kind of scuffling along doing their thing. You know, I would imagine in August the team will look different.
Oh, yeah. Well, in October, they hope it looks different and that kind of thing. The Cardinals are in this span of their schedule where they just finished a three-game series hosting the Kansas City Royals, who you wrote about, and the benefit that they've had of how they've built to this point and then augmented it with the addition of some outside pitching, like Michael Wacha is an example, Seth Lugo is another example, and they've hit right on those. Then the Cardinals have the Dodgers in town for a weekend. The homestand, the longest homestand so far this season, ends with Toronto in town, and then it's off to Milwaukee for the Cardinals' first visit to their division rivals there for a lengthy series. I want to take a look at three of those series: Kansas City, the Dodgers, and then Milwaukee in the distance. And if you put them on a spectrum, Jeff, of market size and ability to contend, the Dodgers are at one end, really only in, I mean, maybe in a neighborhood unto themselves, to be honest. And the only one closest to them would be the Yankees and the Mets, or you could put all three of them there, but the Dodgers are probably just on the far extreme of it. Milwaukee is the smallest market in the majors when you talk about the media market size and the ranking there. They're the smallest, 30 of 30, and yet they've had their good run here in the division, and they've found a way where they can remain in contention without one of the higher payrolls. Kansas City is closer, obviously, to the Milwaukee side of the spectrum, both in size, spending, and here recently, ability to contend. So where is the sweet spot for the Cardinals? If you put that on a continuum, Dodgers on one side, you know, Milwaukee, KC on the other, and then, of course, that is a bigger group of teams on that side. Where are the Cardinals? Where do the Cardinals fit? Are they in the middle? Is the sweet spot right in the middle between those two? Or are they leaning more and more towards the Milwaukee KC realm?
Well, I think they are in the middle, and they do have the potential, because of the history of fan support, to operate at that mid-level where they're going to be, their payroll is going to be in that, you know, 12, 13, 14 range league-wide, maybe creeping up to, used to be a reliable 10 or 11, but mm-hmm. a few owners have kind of changed that model here and there over the years. I think they can be in the middle, but they've got to use the resourcefulness of Kansas City and Milwaukee. What we've seen them, particularly Milwaukee with this extended run, how resourceful that team is. To me, that's a model, because I think that's a good owner. Mm-hmm. They've had good people working there, and they've lost good people that have worked there, but they've continued to be, you know, with the good owner, operational. Sort of like Tampa Bay loses good people, but remains, you know, until recently, a really operational and competitive. So, I mean, I just take the best of what they do and then do what the DeWitts say they're going to do, which is when the team is ready, then they could go out and augment that with some, you know, serious investment. Because there will be an opportunity in St. Louis, if they don't kill the fan base, to make a more serious investment in the team. Where Milwaukee, there's always going to be a ceiling there. Milwaukee's a $2 million or $2 million a season fan base, really. St. Louis used to be three plus. We'll see where St. Louis lands. We'll see what and we've talked about this, what will be the new normal and what will that mean? I think it, unfortunately, will trend more towards a Milwaukee than trying to continue to overachieve in terms of on the business side, which allows you then to throw money at guys.
I really like the word you use there, the resourcefulness of other teams. And I think there's something to this conversation and this notion that really can help illustrate maybe what the Cardinals want to do, but definitely what they ought to do. And, you know, for so long, Jeff, the Cardinals were pretty insular. They were. There's no other way to put it. They thought they had it going on, and they had a lot of evidence that they were doing things well. They had a lot of evidence that they were chugging along and that they had an edge on the market. They got that edge by going outside, not just outside of their organization, but outside of baseball, bringing in Jeff Luhnow and then Brent Strom, who brought him back to baseball. All those things are part of it. And then, of course, you know, bringing in Gersh and Sig Madel and a group of folks that helped kind of then propel them through this successful era where continuity was valued and internal promotion was valued. And, you know, DeWitt really liked the notion of having people with skills and giving them experience. He often told me when I was asking about that, he wasn't looking so much at the experience. He was looking at the talent, and he didn't want experience, you know, or a lack thereof to hold somebody back. He said that when hiring Mike Matheny, he mentioned that as they turned to Schilt. And he certainly mentioned that again when they hired Oliver Marmol. He's like, I'm not looking at the age. I'm looking at the ability. I'm looking at, you know, I'm not counting the number of games they've managed before in the majors. I'm thinking about what they can do if given the opportunity to manage a lot of games in the majors. And so it became this like almost silo where they weren't looking outside much. The way you describe it is so good, because if we think about it this way, like what could the Cardinals borrow from these teams that are doing well and doing well on a budget? What could they borrow to help kind of, you know, improve them at the end of this quote unquote reset or transition year? You outlined it well. It probably is the resourcefulness of the Brewers. I think if they could identify, train, and develop and enhance pitching like the Brewers do, they would be very happy. For you, for the Royals, you were talking about their ability to find pitching. You could adapt that a little bit to find contributors, right? Those would be two things that they could just graft from those two like-sized markets and put into play for them.
Well, yeah, you look at, you know, and it's all about succeeding on the margins and finding using all means necessary, right? So, you know, the ability to spot guys as Tampa Bay did in other people's organizations that might be underutilized, blocked, overlooked, perhaps not progressing, but possessing tools, spotting them early, you know, as they did with, you know, I don't think there was any mystery about Randy Arozarena because he was an older guy coming into the minors from his from Cuba and all that. But they saw things they liked in him and they zeroed in on him and they got a payoff. But they were watching him from the time he started getting an organized ball. So as an older guy with a lot of tools, that was an interesting character. And, and they were willing to accept his interesting character, where that was just one of the many things you looked at what went wrong for the Cardinals. Sometimes the unwillingness to accept some things about some makeup of individuals and whatnot. So, sure. You know, just all the things, all the margins, finding guys early in the process, finding guys in the big leagues, resourcefulness. A guy like Rhys Hoskins, just a guy? Yeah, but he's been pretty useful for his price point for Milwaukee, and he'll probably get traded for future assets at the trade deadline if they are in the chase. So just all aspects of it. And I love what you've been writing about, the action plans for every player, how they're taking this approach for every guy, what to take. And it's a constant process, whether you're down at in the complex league or whether you're in the big leagues right now. They're working on stuff right now at a high level, multidimensional, multifaceted, multi-discipline, using all these different disciplines all at the same time for that guy and trying to make sure that everybody's on the same page up and down, like this is how we do things. So, yeah, I'm intrigued by the change in tempo, the change of attitude from the organization up and down the line, and that's how you do it. You find a way. It doesn't always work, but you have enough successes where you stay in the chase.
And then comes the question that I wonder related to this weekend's visitor. What can the Cardinals realistically, and I get it, like fans will be like, well, no, they can go out and they choose not to, but what could the Cardinals realistically borrow from the Dodgers? Open table. Like, let's look at the whole menu of things that the Dodgers do well. What could the Cardinals borrow from that? From overwhelming size of coaching staffs to overwhelming investments to trying to find other markets to then dominate for promotional or for advertising aspects. Or the stuff that happens on the field. What could the Cardinals realistically borrow from the Dodgers? What could they pluck from them?
Realistically, because you are in the Midwest, you're never going to have the Pacific Rim marketing power where you're going to do with the Dodgers. I shudder to think at the billions that will be generated with that, with what they have going on there on that front. But, you know, here's an overlooked thing with these guys, besides player development, just making sure that you have volume and quantity and quality. And they've had a history of doing well in the Latin American international markets. You're probably not going to do as well in Asia. But how about just what the Dodgers, how Dave Roberts appreciates guys who are, you know, multidimensional, fit into my team, play a certain way, and how he maintains a roster of that. I mean, like a guy like Chris Taylor was like that. He finally ran out of time because they spotted Tommy Edman, saw value.
But that's an example of how they can stomach that salary.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, team's doing that.
Well, right. And nobody's paying him. Nobody. I think everybody in St. Louis is like, oh, Tommy Edman's getting that? Or you just tell Chris Taylor to hit the bricks. Sorry.
Just hit the frame. Yeah. All right, see ya. Yeah.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you look at their team and there are aspects of just how they run that team on a day-to-day basis that are impressive that you overlook that because they have a Freddie Freeman, they got Shohei, you know, they're loaded. But there's also a way of going about things and a way they utilize different types of players that's impressive. I mean, you're not going to get a Yamamoto here. You're just not. You know, that's not going to happen. But can you watch what they do as they manage their staff and develop guys? And I think there is. It's painful to know that you do operate in a different world. Just you have to, as they say, best practices. There are some things you can take from.
Yeah, I wonder if there's got to be somewhere in there where there's a lesson about the importance of stars, right? Like, you don't need a whole galaxy of them. You may not even need a whole constellation of them, but you got to have stars. And when you look at Kansas City, right, they have their star and they signed him, right? Bobby Witt Jr. That's their star. And they have Salvi Perez, who has stayed there for so long. Milwaukee has Yelich as their star. But, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. probably is the level. But I think you probably name 3-4 different Dodgers before you get to the Midwest stars or even start thinking about them, right? So I wonder if there's like a lesson there about like, all right, Cardinals, like you had the stars and Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, and Nolan Arenado's still here. But is there a need for star power in St. Louis that is beyond the need there is for the Brewers, for the Royals? Like, just as far as like connecting to the fan base, you talk about like reasserting, you know, that 3 million, whereas like Kansas City and the Brewers are topped out at lower than that. Does star power factor into that at all, Jeff? Like, do you need that in St. Louis to bring people to the ballpark?
Well, I think it's an interesting question. We have this all the time. Why do teams like Tampa and Milwaukee, Kansas City in some cases, why are they just shrug and churn guys and try to, on a given year, have a competitive team around the margins and don't get stuck with a lot of bad contracts? At least that's the way they want to operate now. Well, you know, they know their fan base is what it is, and it's not getting a whole lot bigger, and they know where the ceiling is, and they operate accordingly. The trick for the Cardinals is they know their ceiling's pretty high, and they can get caught in that. You get caught in keeping guys, maybe being overly generous, keeping wrong guys. Maybe you go for that older star power guy and hope that it works. And, you know, you go back to 22 when you had, until they wore out, but you had two guys playing at MVP level, plus Albert also deciding to play at the MVP level on his way out the door, all at the same time until they ran out of gas. And so you saw what that was. You saw how it energized the city. You saw how dramatic that was, how exciting it was, how much fun it was. So, yeah, I mean, it's different for St. Louis because there's a higher ceiling here than in these other markets, and they know that. And the DeWitts are always having to balance that need, and it's current now. Some fans are saying, just sell these guys now, be done with it. Well, these guys aren't stars, but they're helping you win, and you're used to drawing fans. You don't want your fan base to dissipate. It changes – the business model here is different than Kansas City and Milwaukee, and it's a good thing. It's a bad thing, too, you know, in that sense, in terms of – because you do need, there is an obligation, and Bill DeWitt Sr. has talked about this, that, you know, it's, or Bill DeWitt Jr., excuse me, that, you know, St. Louis is used to this. St. Louis is used to having this. And now the third's going to have to follow in that legacy, because St. Louis, unless St. Louis quits getting used to it.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, and then what happens? I mean, it's kind of, you know, one thing you mentioned about like the Cardinals, right? Like, okay, I wonder about this. And I had Brad Lefton on the podcast a month or so ago to talk about like, how do the Cardinals get a foothold in Asia, in Japan, in that Pacific Rim? Or do they just surrender to the fact that their geography is what their geography is, and their geography is not going to make them a player there? I've gotten to wondering here in the past week or so, after watching the Orioles and knowing that Sugano is on a 1-year deal there. And it sure looks like if he continues to pitch well, that he'd be a guy on the move, maybe one of the few starters on the move, if the Cardinals don't crater and then add Steven Matz and Eric Fetty and maybe Sonny Gray to the list of available starters. But say the Cardinals are in it and the Orioles are not, and the Orioles are looking. I do wonder if maybe there's a play there where you're not signing a player from Japan, because you realize that like they didn't make a play. They've had a few, you know, they went after a reliever who eventually signed with San Diego, because of course, if your choices are between San Diego and St. Louis and you're coming from Japan, you're likely going to go to San Diego. But they did trade him, and he ended up briefly with Miami, which was never a player involved in it. So I wonder, Jeff, if there's like maybe the the trade is the one that eases open that possibility. If you trade for Sugano, you might get a way into that marketplace that maybe you don't. And while that would benefit you as a buyer at the deadline, there also might be like some like peripheral benefits to saying, look, you know, we had to deal to get this guy, but once he got here, look at how he thrived, or look at what he looked like, or look how that opened up the market to us, or at least sold some jerseys in that market so that there people were wearing Cardinals gear, you know, and there was one for every 500 Dodgers jerseys.
Well, I think there's that this goes to the point of being resourceful, of trying to find opportunities and seeing if there's something you can build on. And, you know, all means necessary. One thing I do think there are, to me, when I look at two things with the Cardinals, where I see hope. One, I think under Randy Flores, they definitely look to they've rolled the dice on some higher ceiling guys. A guy like Joshua Baez, he may finally make it or he may not, but at least they're showing some signs of life. You went for a high ceiling guy in high school. You've done that a couple of times. You've gotten away from the sure guy in college, although, you know, Alec Burleson's been that guy who hit in college, can hit in the pros. But you've aimed high. You've tried for some high ceiling guys. To me, you've got to go to Latin America. Mm-hmm. You signed your last signing class. You were aggressive. You went for some young guys, some toolsy guys, some from different parts of the marketplace that weren't as well traveled. You saw a couple guys in the Dominican Summer League flash really well. One of them's doing well down in the Complex League. A guy with a higher ceiling. You've got to.
He got promoted. Just
he's a beast. Well, you know, and this is a higher ceiling guy, right?
It's Rano Rodriguez, catcher there. Listed as a third baseman, a playing catcher. He as we're talking, pretty much, or as we're putting together planning this podcast, promoted to Low A, Palm Beach, and already hitting homers there. 102 off the bat, home run the other day. He's got two there already, and won the Cardinals Player of the Month award for May because, of course, he did.
Well, you've got to find guys. You've got to find a higher ceiling guys. And the other process, and this is the whole multidisciplinary thing, I've always been troubled by the fact that they get a lot of guys in the international market, and they make it about as far as Peoria.
Yeah.
And then what? And there's a million of them. And I know it's because you're signing a lot. You're not assigning as many. You're not doing it quite the cattle call without the much smaller minor leagues than you used to have. But how can you get guys that you're signing that are so young, so raw? How do you get them from being that 17-year-old to a 21, 22-year-old? How do you get an Ivan Herrera at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of time. They're investing a lot of time in Ivan Herrera. And at the end of the day, there's still work to do with his catching, but clearly he's a big league player. How do you get more of that? Because there's nothing holding you back in St. Louis from achieving that goal, right?
I mean, more pitching. Just like that's the real, like the real failing of where they've been is, you know, how do they hit such a wall where there isn't at least a wave here recently? I mean, this year's been different, but the previous 2 years, there just wasn't that contribution, and they weren't able to do. When we talk about like borrowing from other teams, you know, you don't have the financial resources to do what the Dodgers did, where it's just basically play the waivers, sign a bunch of folks at high dollars, sign this minor league guy who's going to make this great money when he gets up there. You can't accumulate the relievers in the way that the Dodgers even did this past winter. But you should be able to get into a spot, or you need to strive to get into a spot where you're developing those options and your depth doesn't stall out, like you said, at Peoria. Your depth goes into Springfield. And if you have to churn through it, then that's the modern game. But you have to rely on the quantity that you're able to develop so that you get quality when you need it. And then you can move on as necessary. There is a model there where the Dodgers do it with money, that you could do it with development and investment. And you're right, Latin America has to be a part of it. It can't be that they have all this quantity and no quality emerges past high A.
I'm going to throw one back at Derek Gould here.
Sure.
All right, so you're Randy Flores. You're sitting there. You got two choices.
My influence is because I suggested they painted a seat gold.
Now yeah, I mean, you're now obviously they're listening. Obviously, yeah. You got that golden seat. They'll be there hopefully for some time. But
they already took it out, Jeff.
What? And
they're auctioning it off for tornado relief. So they took it out and they had Nolan Arenado sign it and they're auctioning it off for tornado relief.
Did that already trigger more Nolan Arenado trade rumors?
But, oh no, but I just to explain it to folks, it did have something to do with the paint. Like, so they literally painted the seat gold as opposed to had a gold molded seat. So maybe that's the next step. Maybe they do a gold molded seat there. That'd be good. But they did literally paint it gold. So they didn't know how long it would last for the weather or what it would do if it was rained on and then somebody sat on it. Would they walk away with gold seats? You know, that kind of thing.
It's going to hold up when it's 101 degrees at Bush in July. But all right, getting back to my premise.
Yeah, would they sweat through and have gold britches? Yeah.
There you go. Exactly. All right. So let me get to my premise. You've got two choices. You're picking five. You got two choices. You got a guy. You're going to have a collegiate pitcher, an SEC pitcher, one of those guys who can, you know, could probably be in double A in a year and maybe in the big leagues in two, or a really high-end high school pitcher. And then the ultimate risk, is there a greater risk in the world than chasing that high-ceiling high school pitcher?
Oh, I thought you were going to go in completely. So I have an answer for this. I thought you were going to go in a completely different direction. I thought you were going to hit me with the high ceiling position player.
No, I'm going to, because I think the highest thing, because that's people always say you don't have an ace. All right. But one way you get them is to roll on high. But so many teams have gone after these high ceiling guys in high school. And Tink Hentz, he may in his life get to 500 innings. In his life, maybe in the minors or not. And he's a sensational talent.
He is a lot of talent.
He's a high ceiling talent. He's sensational, but he can't stay healthy. So what do you do?
I take the college and pitcher and I don't have to think much about it. And I'm fine with that. Right, I take the college SEC. I take the Lance Lynn, the Dakota Hudson, the Michael Walker. You throw whoever you want at me, the Zach Allen. You throw it at me and you can you say, well, yeah, here's the spectrum of outcomes, and you might only get those guys. And what can you say about those guys? Because they definitely run the gamut of what they've turned out to be. But no, I go that guy. I go that guy 99 times out of 100. And I realize that I might be leaving a Shelby Miller or a Josh Johnson or a Tink Hentz. But I think, you know, what shows the trend for me is actually the guy who might be the Cardinals' answer for this is Tekoa Roby. And Tekoa Roby is having a remarkable season at Class AA. He had a really strong turn of commitment and answers and devotion and direction and just really – he had a very important offseason. He invested in preparation for the season after being frustrated by injury and soreness and not knowing the difference and trying to push through things and then trying to also withdraw from the, he put in so much effort and curiosity and research and feel into this offseason. Just very impressive, just the way he talked through it. And he's being rewarded for it now with tremendous performance. That is going to get him to AAA. One of the things they want to see from him is making those consistent starts, the routine, the between starts, the durability and everything like that, because he's got a special fastball, Jeff. He just does. He has a special fastball that projects to be a remarkable starter. He just does. And he's got to stay healthy. He's got to get durable. He's got to improve. Some of the secondary stuff has to get sharper. That happens naturally as he moves up. But he's got a fastball that plays, and it plays now. And it's how he outfits it with all these other elements that make a good starting pitcher. All of that is to be said that they traded for him. They didn't draft him. They traded for him. And while that's not a guaranteed way to go about things, because it does mean a down cycle, you do have to have a down year where you're willing to trade a Jordan Montgomery to get a guy like that. It does speak to the idea that look around, man, look at all this frustration about the pitching the Cardinals don't have. is partially because they traded two guys, Zach Gallen and Sandy Alcantara, who are those guys, but they traded them, right? They traded them after, you know, when there was more information about them. And I think there's probably something there. Like, if you can find ways to gather more information about a guy and acquire him, or identify a guy who you can bring more out of, which is really the key, that's a beneficial, you know, like, it wouldn't be, you know, the Cardinals going to trade for Sandy Alcantara, that would certainly close the circle on the Mozeliak era, right? If they pulled that off. But there's also something savvy about that, right? Like, they have waited for the time for the guy to emerge, and they can make a move with some known quantity, or they can get it to Kohorobi, who is definitely not a known quantity, but has the high upside that they can see, well, we can develop this in him, as opposed to taking a player like that in the draft when, and this is key, when the alternative that you offered me is there. That's key. When the alternative is there, and having to start from scratch with the unknown of the potential and not benefiting from what that person has done and then acquiring.
Well, I think what I like about that conversation is that, you know, it speaks to one of the ways, again, we talk about trying to succeed and you have to use all means necessary. The whole process of getting guys into a frame of mind, as Roby did, and communicating with them, making them feel good. And we've seen a lot in your reporting, and in Daniel's reporting, about guys who are feeling good about the sort of feedback they're getting, the plan that they were given, the way they were being approached, the way they were being presented information, the way they were being coached and guided. Every team is trying to master that. Some teams, like the Cardinals, sat back and watched these professional pitching and hitting labs pop up and start turning guys around for money and realize, you know, maybe there's things we don't know. Maybe there's things we can learn. Yeah. Now, everybody's trying to do that, and this could come down to a race of who can do a better job of changing a pitcher's the shape of the pitches developing in addition to more velocity or more spin, but just everything, the mental approach, physical approach. I think it's a fascinating time for baseball because there's so much that can be done, so much science, so much knowledge, and there's just coaching technique and reaching people.
Yeah. The Brewers and their changeup, the Houston Astros and their spin rate. You know, these are all things that, you know, other teams take note and find out, like, what are they doing? Are they doing it on the up and up, or are they doing it in a way that gets a little more attention, or what are they doing? I mean, the Brewers, you know, scouting, how they scout amateur, you know, how much money the Brewers invest in going out into the amateur ranks and they don't spend on scouting the pros because they can do that in-house on video or whatever reason, right? Like, how it's the allocation of spending and where they want to emphasize and where they want to specialize. And, you know, the Dodgers are just able to do it all. They're just able to do it all. And they do benefit from that. I mean, they can, we've written about and talked about, though it feels like forever ago, the number of scouts they dispatched to dissect the Cardinals just for a game. If you recall that wild card game, and just the amount of Dodger scouts and even an analytics guy who descended on the Cardinals to pick them apart in person, that number of investment, you know, you can contrast that with some teams that don't have many or any pro scouts and they're doing it on video, but they are shifting that spending, or some are, into amateur ranks and what they do there. So, lower professional, so that they can identify these guys, exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, find the guy who has this potential that you didn't get to draft, but somebody else did. And now you can benefit from what you see in them and how you see them fit what you're really good at developing. I think it's fascinating. You know, in the Cardinals had an identity for a long time. You mentioned, like, the Dave Roberts, the versatility guy, right? Edmund, Chris Taylor. Cardinals had a great reputation for always finding impact players like that. They still have Brendan Donovan. But you go through the long line over the last 15, 16 years, you can always find that, like, versatile fielder, the utility guy who all of a sudden, you know, either shines at multiple positions or is needed, Abraham Nunez, at one position and takes off, right, for a while, or Aaron Miles, or There's a handful of them over the years that you could point to. So the Cardinals obviously had success, and they had that assembly line of, you know, straight out of Central Casting college pitchers there for a while. It just stalled. You know, Zach Thompson's run into health troubles. Dakota Hudson had that one really strong turn, but never really, you know, was able to have an encore. The game changed quite a bit, and so did what the Cardinals were thinking. And I think that you know, kind of led to some of Dakota Hudson's problem, because he wasn't the kind of pitcher that everybody was chasing, and the fact that they wanted to miss bats. So there's something really to that, Jeff, what you're describing is like, what identity do the Cardinals have next? Because we know what they've had for a while, but what do they have next?
Yeah. And we've talked about that. I think if, you know, Ollie has his way, they'll just be, again, athletic. You know, try to, you know, play with speed, field well. They've lost some of that with the grind of the seasons, the fielding edge. Mm-hmm. But they've got guys who are clearly, you look out, you see the potential. You see what a Jordan Walker can do, a huge guy flying around the, what a Victor Scott can do, smart, fast guy, worker, mm-hmm. locked in. Or they develop a guy who wasn't a great college hitter into being a competitive major league hitter. There's work to do. Still more work, but he's going to put the work in. So they're showing. I think you're seeing some things emerge with this group. Besides having some traditional Cardinal type guys like a Brendan Donovan, you're seeing a more exciting brand that harkens back to. We're not talking to the success of Whitey Ball now, but at least some glimmer of what that looked like.
Right. Yeah.
With Mason Winn at short and such, and possibly what Weatherholt could be. Could he become a Tommy Herr? You know, that sort of thing. So. We'll see.
I think they want him to be a bit better. I mean, Tommy Herr's a team Hall of Famer, very popular with the fans. But, you know, I think the Cardinals would like an impact, like a Dustin Pedroia type. They'd take that, right?
He wants some more slug, and right now he's got to get more slug.
Right. Well, slug happens in the gap too. Yeah, he did. Yeah. You mentioned the grind. I mean, do you think some of that is catching up with them on the field? Do you think there's some regression to the mean going on? I mean, you have so many balls in play. You go up against teams like Toronto and Kansas City who put a lot of balls in play. It's just going to catch up to you a little bit, and it all happens at a time when there's so many games scheduled. You know, they got a bit of a relief with a rainout, but then the fifth doubleheader of the season already caught them. So do you think you're seeing some of the grind of the season show up, or as we learned, fatigue-related issues starting to show up on the field?
Yeah, I think you've seen it pretty much in all areas, right? I mean, they've made some uncharacteristic plays in the field. They were winning games with those plays. Again, winning in the margins, making those plays in the field. Good, great plays, but also all the routine plays. You know, Andre Pallante's probably found his level. He's going to have some good games, and he's going to have some bad games. You know, I think he's been a great success story, but he's probably a 5-6 starter. I think, you know, you look at Matthew Liberatore, it's a process. You know, now that he's a starting pitcher, he settled into his role, but being a starting pitcher is a grind. Repeating your mechanics, staying in a groove, adjusting the way a guy like Sonny Gray is so psychotic about making adjustments, but it works for him. He's had a hell of a career. But he's so intense, and he's always making adjustments. It's a process, and Matthew wants to learn. You know, I love his maturity and all that, but mm-hmm. it's just, you know, this is reality. This is what happens in baseball. And if Matthew, in the old days, if you had a bunch of guys in the minors like the Dodgers, and you had the 10-day rule, he'd be on a 10-day IL right now, getting the old refresh button, right?
Right.
They'd have something else popped up, and he would just be getting a chance to go reset for some bullpens for 10 days and come back.
Or but not. I mean, they would be like, is he in a dead arm phase? Are the innings starting to mount?
Yeah.
You know, is the workload there? And how do you get – you're right. He would – you're exactly right. The Dodgers would put him on the IL. They would cycle a little bit. He would miss one start, but he would get the break of two, and he'd come back and probably, you know, bounce back right away.
And that's – you know, but they don't have that ability. And – just all these guys, right? Victor Scott, you've written about, you know, hey, all of a sudden he hits fastballs. Guess what? Doesn't get to see too many fastballs down the middle anymore. And they got fed a bunch of left-handed pitchers. And for some reason, you got all these young guys who are left-handed hitters that are in the system coming up as well. You know, the guy, if Church was a right-handed hitter and he could play in the outfield, he could run a little bit. He could be here now probably because he just got it bumped up to Memphis. But they got all these left-handed hitters, and he just got fed a bunch of left-handed pitching on top of everything else that was going on.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, I think it's the nature of it. You know, a lot of guys are being asked to do more. Mason Wynn plays all the time, but now he's being asked to play in a higher offensive role.
Right. It's a great point. Yeah.
You know, it's just, you're either getting to play more than you were, or you're being asked to do more.
The workload is real.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's a great point. And I mean, and the phrase on it, I mean, you know, this season is longer, and you know, the delays and the fact that, like, you know, just the nature of the schedule. I do want to, I want to bring up two fascinating parts of the schedule. One is like the Cubs are all done with the Dodgers. They finished off a lot of their series out West. And the Cubs have a strong record, but it's the Cardinals who have the easiest schedule in terms of strength of schedule for the remaining stretch here. The Cardinals do have all their games against the Dodgers. They do have all their games left against San Diego. They have all their games left against the Cubs, for that matter. But within that framework, they also have more than half of their remaining home games after they leave town here next week are against teams with losing records. They still have the Rockies and the Marlins and the White Sox and more games against the Pirates to feast on. So the notion of, like, well, you know, the schedule is going to be difficult. It is, for this reason, is incredibly, Jeff, the Cardinals have not played West yet, and they won't until the first day back from the game, from the All-Star break. That's their first real journey to a time zone west of their own time zone. Isn't that crazy? So they got a long haul as far as the schedule goes, where it's helped by the fact that they're not, like, out there for a lengthy stretch. They have a very pleasant pair of west trips that go along the Rocky Mountains, you know, or along the mountain range there, where they go Arizona and then to Colorado, then they come home. Then they go up to San Diego, and then they cruise up, maybe even drive themselves up to LA for a series. And then it gets really weird when they go Seattle, Milwaukee, and San Francisco, Chicago, but they're not lingering out there on the West Coast. It's just so weird that it's so packed in the second half.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they find, where do they find second wins, right? I mean, there'll be some soft spots in the schedule that help you, but yeah, they still got to find second wins, because if guys are in a rut, if guys are tired, they're trying to play through something, like Jordan Walker trying to play through his wrist, which they don't want him to do. Stuff starts piling up. Even if you play a lesser team, they'll throw some guy that nobody's ever seen before. There's no report on. Wasn't very good in AAA, so there wasn't a ton of knowledge about a guy. Or he was in AA, passed right through AAA. Now you're facing him in the big leagues. Like, hey, who's this cat? What's he throw? And, you know, you get to the fifth inning, you're still trying to figure it out. I mean, that becomes your world, playing some of these lesser teams too. So, yeah, I mean, there's no guarantee that that's going to help. They've got to find second wins from within. And organizationally, again, the pitching side is extremely limited beyond McGreevy in terms of where they're going to find that second win.
All right, I want to close here with a question for you. I'm really eager to get your opinion on this. One of the bigger news stories of the past week in baseball was Jerry Reinsdorf reaching an agreement with a potential and likely future owner of the Chicago White Sox. The deal is with the owner of the Phoenix Suns, one of the big owners of the Phoenix Suns, huge investment banker. He also has members of his family involved. But he's entered into an arrangement where he's going to give a capital infusion into the White Sox for coverage of debt and for spending on baseball operations and payroll, all that stuff. And then have, over the course of several years, Reinsdorf will have the option to sell a controlling interest, or at the end of those years, he'll have the option to buy a controlling interest. However this goes, it sure is set up to end up with a new owner of the White Sox, and along the way, more spending from the White Sox, which brings me to this question, Jeff. What do you think that means for the Cubs? Because the American League Central now is looking at having a guy with a lot of wealth, an investment, you know, hedge fund background, so much wealth, now entering the world of the Minnesota Twins and the Kansas City Royals and the Cleveland Guardians and, you know, the Detroit Tigers, and, you know, now entering flyover country, where definitely an area vulnerable to the big spender. But I wonder what it means to have that kind of owner in your backyard when you're the Cubs and you haven't had to flex your might or your potential as a big market, and you've gotten by acting like one of the smaller market teams.
Yeah, the Ricketts family, I mean, it's a source of no small amount of aggravation, I suppose, for Cubs fans, particularly since they've been adept at seeing the vast real estate potential of turning the amusement park that is Wrigley Field into the amusement district that is Wrigleyville and monetizing that to high levels. Not only is this a big market, not only is this a franchise that's an ATM machine because of its history and also its unique setting, but it's the surrounding area is unique, that, and they're monetizing that. There is no excuse not to go wild every year and go hard every year. And you showed what happens when you do, and you had results. You didn't win title after title, but you won a title, and you're damn good for multiple years. There's no excuse, none, for the Cubs to go through these cycles where they're not competitive. And I mean, they got to sign Tucker, and you got all this potential. I know the worst part is that people are going to go there and party whether they're great or not, the Cubs. That's the worst aspect of it, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of is held back, at least I'm sure in the mindset of some owners. Well, why should we go crazy if you're going to show up anyways? But it just, they need the right owner. And I don't, for a host of reasons, I don't think that's the right group. Do they have the resources? That family's got the money? But my God, you take some of these other owners that went in some of these other markets, what they would have done if they got a hold of the Cubs, yeah, it would be a lot different. I think they'd be super aggressive. And that would not be good for the Cardinals, because, again, the Cardinals can't play in that league. The Cubs, if the Cubs maxed out what they could do, the potential there, I mean, totally maxed it out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that would mean propping that ballpark up forever in some form and somehow keeping that thing alive. And just, God, that market, that setting, oh, you could, it's so, yeah, I mean, it's a great, I mean, I'm sure Chicago fans right now are thinking, this is good. This could mm-hmm. be really good. Let's see these guys get pushed a little bit.
Yeah, from right next door. You know, many years ago, I was at the GM meetings, and it was one of Theo Epstein's first, or it might have been his first, but first or second year in charge of the Cubs. And I was talking with him, and he said the one thing in that division, you know, that he was coming into was this notion that what happens if the Cardinals ever put their foot on the gas pedal like they could financially. That's what he was describing. He said the support they had, the TV deal that they were about to get, which would be good for their size in part because of the ad revenue and everything like that. It wasn't going to be a whopper. It wasn't going to be a big city type of deal, but the perception was that it would definitely add, and it did, until everything kind of fell apart with the RSN model. But Theo Epstein told me, he's like, what happens when they really put their foot on the gas financially? They have the chance to take it to run away from everybody. I think that now applies. And I understood where he was coming from at the time, because the Cubs were not in a position to do that. And they were trying to figure their way out. The ballpark and the real estate, as you mentioned, was not the jackpot that it is now. And, you know, then you have sports betting. You have so much going on there for them to create revenue streams and their own market. I mean, sorry, their own TV network now. I mean, they got a lot going for them. So I think the what Theo once said about the Cardinals applies to the Cubs. What happens when they put the foot on the gas pedal, and does the drag race White Sox make that more likely?
And my last question, and we'll talk about this probably every time we do a podcast, is at what point do the DeWitts become outmanned? They got resources, but they don't have the kind of resources you're talking about here. Like this cat that the people that are buying into the White Sox, I'm guessing there's some serious coin there, right?
Yeah, there is. Oh yeah, serious.
They're
the current type of owner. The Cohen. Right. This is what it takes.
So that's the world that's where sports is going. A lot of people are crying about all the private equity money pouring into sports. Leagues don't mind the fact all this private equity money is pouring in, because there's so much private equity money out there. Topic for another day. Topic for another day, Derek.
I mean, it'll take expansion to help. You know, you want a windfall. There it is. I mean, that's one area where you could prolong exactly what you're talking about with the Cardinals ownership. If they can't play in those waters, then expansion will at least give them that sugar rush of revenue to do so for a little bit.
Get a great owner in Nashville and turn that thing into the new Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, boy. There you go. There so, yeah, you go.
Get the right owner, man. That's what
nothing. Nothing quite jolts a team like proximity or like a successful team in your vague and nearby region, just pushing you a little bit.
There you go.
Yeah. That is Jeff Gordon, sports columnist at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. You can read his work there in the pages of the Post-Dispatch and at STLtoday.com. He's constantly writing there. He's the author of Tip Sheet. You can also catch his columns there. He is also featured in Inside Pitch, a video here at STLtoday.com with fellow columnist Lynn Worthy. You can find all the constant Cardinals coverage at the Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com, including this, the weekly podcast, best podcast in baseball. Please rate and review it. Subscribe to it because subscriptions make sponsorships possible. The best podcast in baseball is sponsored weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. And we'll be back with a brand new episode next week after the Cardinals close out this long homestand and then head north for a showdown with the Brewers. Jeff, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, great being here, Derek. Look forward to seeing the Dodgers in town. Let's go. Hopefully it stops raining.
And Shohei Ohtani in town. So, you know, a visit from just the greatest player in the universe, right? So that'll be it'll be fun. I think we the only thing we can do is exactly what we, you know, encouraged to do at the ballpark during the rainouts and the doubleheaders and all the lengthy days ahead in June, and that's embrace the grind. I can see the t-shirts already.
It's hard to ask a fan to do that, though. They just want more cotton candy or beer, depending on their age.
Wins. They want more wins. I think they want more wins. I get the sense that they want more wins. More wins and gold seeds, Jeff.
There you go.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.